Hello and welcome to another episode of DE Classified. My name is Tyler, an intern aboard at the USS Slater. And today we will be speaking about the daring capture of U-505. U-505 was a Type 9C U-boat ordered on the 25th of September 1939, less than a month after the dashing Blitzkrieg into Poland. She was laid down on the 12th of June 1940 at Deutsche Werft AG in Hamburg-Finkenwerder, which was responsible for the production of 113 U-boats. This shipyard in northern Germany produced the Type 9C U-boat and her slightly larger variant, the Type 9C-40. The Type 9C was a larger U-boat, displacing around 1,120 tons, and carried 22 torpedoes, with 4 forward tubes and 2 aft tubes. The submarines had a long range of 8,100 miles, thanks to her 208 tons of diesel fuel that powered her two Munich-manufactured MAN diesel engines. U-505 was constructed in Werk 295 and launched on the 24th of May 1941. Commissioned on 26th of August 1941 with Kapitän Leutnant Axel Olaf Löwe in command. Löwe was born on the 3rd of January 1909 in the northern German city of Kiel. Löwe joined the Reichsmarine in 1928 and served in the Naval Academy until September of 1939. When he assumed a staff role with the German High Command. Kapitänleutnant Löwe underwent sub-training from November of 1940 to April 1941, before being assigned his first command in U-74. After gaining valuable combat experience, Löwe became U-505's first commanding officer. As U-505's first commanding officer, he led the boat on 3 very successful war patrols, claiming 7 ships sunk, 3 of which were American. The cargo steamers the SS West Ermo and the SS Seathrush, along with the Liberty ship SS Thomas McKean, with a grand total of 38,000 tons. Löwe's command of U-505 ended on the 5th of September 1942 due to a career-ending bout of appendicitis. His successor, Captain Leutnant Peter Zech, assumed command the following day. Born in Constantinople on October 1, 1918, Zech, up to that point, was a rapidly promoted, highly successful submariner. The new captain of U-505 was seemingly destined for a distinguished career, following his war patrols aboard U-124 as first watch officer, the equivalent to an executive officer in the U.S. Navy. This Type 9B U-boat was incredibly successful in her first 4 patrols, sinking 22 ships including a Free French corvette and the British light cruiser HMS Dundin, further advancing the career of Zech while making U-124 the third most successful U-boat of the war. Fortunately for the Allies, the young submarine captain's luck would not transfer into his new vessel. Former control roommate aboard U-505 Hans Gubler stated, quote, "Our first impression of him was that he was intelligent, self-confident, but a little aloof. However, we found out that this aloofness hid an explosive temper." Curiously, Zech's first official order was that the crew of U-505 would undergo infantry training with their newly issued Mauser 98K rifles. This may have been due to what Zech viewed as a lack of discipline. Slightly under a month into her first war patrol under Captain Leutnant Zech, U-505 was heavily damaged by a direct impact from a 250-pound depth charge delivered by a low-flying Lockheed Hudson from the RAF's No. 53 Squadron southeast of Trinidad. The depth charge struck on the deck just above the waterline, killing a watch officer and wounding another in the conning tower, while severely damaging the ship's pressurized hull and destroying the ship's anti-aircraft gun. The explosion sent a breeze into the air, causing the Lockheed aircraft to crash into the ocean, killing the pilot, Flight Sergeant Ronald Silcock, and his entire crew. During this extreme commotion, Zech ordered the crew to abandon the submarine, as the engine rooms were now flooding. This may have revealed his weakness under pressure to the crew, a trait that would eventually become his demise. It was Chief Petty Officer Otto Frick that believed she was still seaworthy, and after being sealed watertight, she limped back to a port in Lorient, France, becoming known as, quote, the most heavily damaged U-boat to successfully return to port, end quote. U-505 remained in Lorient for 6 months, undergoing extensive repairs and modifications, which including an expanded conning tower structure, two twin flak 30 mounts, and an SKC-30 autocannon. Following repairs, U-505 began her fifth war patrol on the 1st of July 1943. She returned only 13 days later after being attacked by three British destroyers dispatched from a hunter-killer group. The damage was minimal, although she did return to Lorient on the 13th of July for repairs. The next four patrols by U-505 were interrupted by a series of mechanical failures, some of which were caused by French saboteurs working with the resistance. These hindrances included a hole drilled into the diesel tank and poor welding work. Much to the disdain of Zetsch, he became known as, quote, the one commander who would always come back, end quote. After a prolonged stay in Lorient, U-505, still under the command of Zetsch, embarked on her 10th Atlantic War Patrol. Throughout the day of the 23rd of October 1943, the crew member and ardent Nazi Hans Gobler wrote, quote, over the course of several hours, the rumbling became louder and more distinct. They were clearly the explosions of depth charges. A long, steady series of them would go off, followed by silence, then another long series. The drum roll of the depth charges seemed to affect Zetsch very deeply. Over the next several hours, the noise gradually got louder. It would stop for a short while, then resume closer than before. I'm not being melodramatic when I tell you it began to sound like a slow, steady drumbeat of a military funeral procession, inching ever closer to our position. We dived as soon as the batteries were recharged and didn't resurface until well after dark. I was back on duty that evening when, a little after midnight, we began hearing faint, distant rumbles. End quote. U-505's commanding officer proceeded to his cabin, only requesting updates from his radio and sonar operators, while the rest of the crew was perplexed to learn that their captain had retreated to his sleeping quarters, quote, as the kettle drum beat of depth charges got closer and closer, end quote. At 1948, the sonarmen relayed to Zetsch that they were hearing engines above them. No sooner was the boat rocked by the percussive blast of a depth charge which shattered glass and extinguished all the lights. Shortly thereafter, the submarine was struck by two more consecutive blasts, knocking the entire crew off their feet. The third depth charge explosion nearly flipped the U-boat over, and the fourth deafened the crew's ears. All this commotion and no orders from the commanding officer? Where was he? Captain Lieutenant Peter Zetsch was found lying in his bunk, blood streaming out in little gushes from a small hole in the side of his head. Zetsch took his own life with his service pistol, a Walther PPK, the same type of pistol used by Adolf Hitler less than 2 years later. Zetsch was the only known U-boat commanding officer to take his own life during a war patrol. The first watch officer, Oberstleutnant Paul Meyer, took command, evaded pursuers, and managed to safely return once again to Lorient on the 7th of November 1943. Captain Lieutenant Peter Zetsch only sunk one ship in his 118 days at sea. The British steam merchant Ocean Justice for a grand total of 7,173 tons. The deceased skipper's command would be passed to the third and final commanding officer of U-505, Oberleutnant Harold Lange, who, when appointed by Admiral Dönitz, became the oldest U-boat commander during the war. Lange's first war patrol would begin on the 25th of December 1943. German torpedo boat T-25 was one of 15 Type 39 torpedo boats, often referred to as the Elbing class, built by the Kriegsmarine during the Second World War. These boats were designed to be used as escort convoys and act as blockade runners through the English Channel and the Bay of Biscay in the Northeast Atlantic. T-25 T-25 was acting as a blockade runner of the German cargo ship MV Osorno, which was followed by another cargo ship and a destroyer flotilla acting in escort. Due to the Allies' use of military intelligence through Ultra, they were aware of these blockade runners. Because of this intelligence, the Allies were able to position light cruisers and a consolidated force of RAF B-24 Liberators to intercept the German fleet. This force of bombers would be responsible for sinking the cargo ship MV Osterufer. Fortunately for the Allied force, the Kriegsmarine blockade runners would be unaware of the sinking until the following day. And they would still be advancing to the rendezvous point until being spotted on the morning of the 28th December by a United States Army Air Force B-24. Thereupon, the British light cruisers HMS Glasgow and HMS Enterprise, the latter being only one of two Emerald-class light cruisers built by the Royal Navy, were dispatched to intercept. Glasgow fired upon the destroyer flotilla from a range of 21,400 yards. The German destroyers returned fire, striking the Glasgow only once. This is when Kapitän Zerzi Hans Erminger, commander of the destroyer flotilla, made the fateful decision to split his force, allowing Glasgow to cripple T-25 with multiple torpedo strikes. 34 survivors from the stricken torpedo boat were rescued by U-505, commanded by Oberleutnant Harald Lange. They returned to Lorient on the 3rd of January 1944, after the naval action that became known as the Battle of the Bay of Biscay. The Kriegsmarine casualties amounted to 3 ships lost and 532 casualties, contrasted by a mere 2 Allied losses. The Kriegsmarine ceased the use of all blockade runners after this devastating battle. This combat-strained Type 9C U-boat gained infamy from her 12th War Patrol and her entanglement with Hunter Killer Task Force 22.3, whose flagship was the 498-foot Casablanca-class escort carrier USS Guadalcanal, commanded by Captain Daniel Vincent Gallery, a pioneer in naval aviation. A native of Chicago, Gallery was a graduate of Annapolis class of 1920, and the first of 4 Gallery boys to serve in the United States Navy during the war. Task Group 22.3 of the Atlantic Fleet departed the Hampton Roads region of Virginia on the 15th of May 1944 to operate against submarines west of the Cape Verde Islands off French West Africa. Along with the Jeep carrier Guadalcanal, there were 5 destroyer escorts, 4 of which were Edsel class. They were the USS Pillsbury, Pope, Flaherty, and Chatelaine, and the 5th was the USS Jenks, a Buckley class destroyer escort. They made up Escort Division 4 under the command of Commander Frederick S. Hall. Escort Division 4 had set a course for a known U-boat rendezvous point near the Canary Islands, with a mission of neutralizing all located submarines. However, during the departure conference held before leaving port, Gallery and the DE skippers agreed upon a daring plan of action. If the task force can bring a U-boat to the surface fleet, in the words of non-classified film Away Boarders, quote, spray her with small stuff, put crews over the side and attempt to board and capture her, end quote. This hazardous plan was conceived due to the naval intelligence desire for an intact, fully equipped enemy vessel. There were only 2 prior instances throughout the Atlantic campaign that the Allied navies had successfully landed boarding parties on scuttled U-boats, which allowed for the capture of an Enigma machine and enabled Allied codebreakers to decode a large portion of Nazi encryption being sent to their wolf packs. The successful capture of an intact enemy vessel would be a goldmine for Allied intelligence. Well-equipped boarding parties from Guadalcanal included rates like chief photographer's mate such as Clifford Wurla, who was tasked with getting inside the submarine and photographing all installations in the event of the mission's failure. Other rates aboard the Guadalcanal's boarding party included an electrician's mate, who would be charged with studying the batteries and the operating motors of the Type 9C U-boat. In command of the Guadalcanal boarding party was Commander Earl Tresino, the Baby Flattop's engineering officer, who played a pivotal role in the capture of the submerged vessel. After 2 weeks of cruising with no contacts, Task Group 22.3 was searching for a U-boat reported 150 miles west off French North Africa. It was the 4th of June, 1944. Frenchie the Blue Jay, possible sound contact, meaning that Frenchie, codename for the Chatelaine, was on high alert. At 11:09, Chatelaine established a possible sound contact when U-505 launched a torpedo at the escort carrier Guadalcanal. Missing the Guadalcanal but passing underneath the Chatelaine, the Guadalcanal retreated, while the two nearest destroyer escorts, Jenks and Pope, broke off to assist the Chatelaine. The Chatelaine deployed her depth charges on the first pass against the submarine. Sadly, due to Chatelaine's proximity to the sub, the depth charges did not sink fast enough, so she deployed her Hedgehogs. Guadalcanal then sortied two of her Grumman F-4F Wildcat fighters to assist the DEs. Lieutenant Commander Dudley S. Knox of Chatelaine announced, "Contact evaluated as sub," and immediately began depth charge attacks in the reported area. The full pattern of depth charge blasts caused minor leaks in the sub's engine room, and almost immediately the aircraft overhead reported an oil sighting and the circling of a sub, which indicated a jammed rudder. Simultaneously, while being sighted by the Wildcat fighters, U-505 submerged at 60 feet and began to reverse course, briefly shaking the destroyer escorts but not the fighter planes, who revealed the boat's positions by firing their weapons to direct the surface vessels. At 11:21, another depth charge barrage, along with all ships of Task Group 22.3, fired anti-personnel rounds rather than armor-piercing rounds, and 30 seconds later, at 11:22, U-505 surfaced in the middle of the task group, once again taking fire from the fighters first, and the 20mm from the destroyer escorts, putting U-505 in a very hellish position. Emphatically, Captain Gallery broadcasted to all his DEs, quote, "I want to capture the bastard, if possible," end quote. A minute later, the fighters reported that U-505 was blowing her ballast tanks, meaning that she was intending to surface. Oberleutnant Lange thus gave the command of Ein Schiff aufgeben, or abandoned ship, and the scuttling procedures were partially neglected. Next, a boarding party from the USS Pillsbury, led by Lieutenant Junior Grade Albert Leroy David, leapt from their motor whaleboats to take position on the surface U-boat. Lieutenant Junior Grade David himself collected sensitive intelligence and disarmed the scuttling charges and secured the flood valves, allowing the flooding to be contained. Recounting the boarding, Bob Lofgren, a sonarman first class of Chatelaine, stated, quote, "An 8-man crew leapt onto the slippery deck and down the hatch as the water closed over the back of the still-moving sub, which was on the verge of upending." USS Pillsbury then began to take U-505 in tow. Unfortunately, one of the submarine's diving planes punctured the hull of the Pillsbury, forcing her to repair. Towing was now left up to the flagship, which had the steel tow cable rigged from her stern to the bow of U-505. Thus began the journey of hauling the captured submarine. Initially, Gallery wanted to head for the friendly port of Dakar, but soon realized his fuel situation was critical and the submarine's rudder was jammed to starboard. The only way to fix this issue would be to use the boat's manual steering mechanism, which was in the aft torpedo room that had been falsely reported as flooded. Gallery, along with Tresino and four others, took a boat over to look and soon discovered there were no active demolition charges were flooding. Later inspection would prove they missed a demolition charge. The team then shifted the steering gear to put the rudders amidships. Now that the rudder was fixed, the crew needed to focus on bringing the boat to an even keel. She was still partly submerged with water crashing over the conning tower. Towing became increasingly strenuous. Luckily, Tresino requested Gallery tow the U-boat at 10 knots, allowing the forward speed of the propellers to also turn the armatures of the electric motors rapidly, thus charging the sub's batteries. With the batteries fully charged, there was enough electricity to run U-505's pumps and eventually bring her to the surface. 59 of the 60 U-505 sailors were aboard the USS Guadalcanal. In sardonic fashion, Gallery paid a visit to Captain Lange in Guadalcanal's sickbay and revealed his submarine had been captured. In disbelief, Lange, who was below decks due to injury received, would not accept the boat's fate until seeing his family photos from his very own cabin. Later, Gallery received orders to halt progress towards Dakar due to the presence of German spies. Instead, Gallery was to bring his catch back to Bermuda, assisted by the DEs and fleet tugs Abnaki and Kennebec. It was here in Bermuda that our very own USS Slater was completing her shakedown cruise when she was chosen to deliver one of U-505's acoustic torpedoes to Virginia. The delivery of the German torpedo went without incident, however, a few new sailors believed the torpedo was booby-trapped. The torpedo was placed on a mattress on the O-1 deck forward of the Slater's stack. USS Jenks was tasked with sailing at maximum speed ahead as she was carrying U-505's Enigma machines and 10 sacks of German codebooks and secret documents. In total, this confidential haul weighed around 1,100 pounds. Ironically, the news of the capture was anything but positive in Washington, fearing the Germans would now change all Enigma codes, leaving the Allies out of touch for some time. No word ever reached German intelligence. When the Allies landed in Normandy 2 days later, German codebreakers had other worries. Fortunately, Gallery's decision to take an intact submarine turned out to be an enormous advantage to Allied intelligence. The famed task group would arrive in Bermuda on June 19, 1944, flying the triumphant Stars and Stripes over the Kriegsmarine ensign. The 59 prisoners were turned over to the commandant of the naval base and, due to the secrecy of the event, were kept in an isolated camp until the end of the war. When the U-boat was given to the base commander, he issued a receipt stating, quote, "One Nazi U-boat, U-505, complete with spare parts," end quote. For his action, Lieutenant Junior Grade David was posthumously awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor. After passing away of a heart attack on the 15th of September, 1945, less than a month before his decoration. His citation reads, "For conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity at the risk of his life above and beyond the call of duty while attached to the USS Pillsbury during the capture of an enemy German submarine off French West Africa, 4th of June, 1944. Taking a vigorous part in the skillfully coordinated attack on the German U-505, which climaxed a prolonged search by the task group, Lieutenant David boldly led a party from the Pillsbury in boarding the hostile submarine as it circled erratically at 5 or 6 knots on the surface. Fully aware that the U-boat might momentarily sink or be blown up by exploding demolition and scuttling charges, he braved the added danger of enemy gunfire to plunge through the conning tower hatch and, with a small party, exerted every effort to keep the ship afloat and to assist the salvage parties in making sure that U-505 was seaworthy for the long tow across the Atlantic to the U.S. By his valiant service, during the first successful boarding and capture of an enemy man-of-war on the high seas by the U.S. Navy since 1815, Lieutenant David contributed materially to the effectiveness of our Battle of the Atlantic and upheld the highest traditions of U.S. naval service. In an article written for the Saturday Evening Post, Captain Daniel Gallery commends his engineering officer's heroics. When it was touch and go whether the sub would remain afloat, Commander Earl Tresino spent hours down in the bilges, crawling around in the oily water under the engines, tracing pipelines and closing valves to make the boat watertight. He risked his life many times by squirming into inaccessible corners under the floor plates where he would not have a chance to escape. Thanks to Tresino's uncanny instinct for finding the right valves and his total disregard of his own safety, we succeeded in saving U-505.
Thank you for listening to DE Classified. This podcast is brought to you by the Destroyer Escort Historical Museum aboard USS Slater. You can find a transcript of this episode, accompanying photos, and a bibliography at ussslater.org/declassified. And I hope you join us next month when we declassify another Destroyer Escort.